We're on Daf Ayin Tes Amid Beis. We learned the Mishnah. Now we'll take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara quotes a Braisa about raising a Behema Daka in Eretz Yisrael. And these are the smaller animals, which are Tzon. They have a tendency of moving around, and they go into the pasture areas of other people. And the Takana was made to prohibit raising these Behema Dakas in Eretz Yisrael because they will be mafsid yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Tana Rabbanan. Ein megadlim behema daka be Eretz Yisrael. Again, as we said before, they eat the growth of the fields, and that is a hefseid to yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Avol megadlim bechoroshim. We saw that choroshim are referring to yaros, are referring to forests, sheve Eretz Yisrael. These are not places where people inhabit the land and live there, and therefore there's no chashash. We don't assume that there'll be a hefseid to the yishuv. Besuria, you're allowed likewise to raise these tzon animals, these young animals, smaller animals in Suria. Afilu biyishuv. Here we apply it even in the place where Jews are living. The Ein Tzarich Lomar b'chutzlaretz, and how much more so in chutzlaretz, because that's not called Hefseid Yishuv Haaretz. Tanya Iduch, we have another braisa that further clarifies this din. Ein Megadlim Behema Daka the Eretz Yisrael, Avol Megadlim Bamidbar, and the braisa gives cases within Eretz Yisrael of areas that are not settled. One is the Midbar Sheba Yehuda, another is Midbar Sheba Sfar Akko. There's a desert area not far from Yerushalayim in what's called Yehuda. There's a desert area up in the north near the northern city of Akko. And in these cases, there's no chashash of Hefseid Yishuv, and you're allowed to grow and raise these Behema Dakas even though it's within the bounds of Eretz Yisrael. We see clearly that the way the Chachamim established this Iser, it's not an absolute Iser wherever there is a mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, but it only applies when and where there's Yishuv. The Braisa continues, V'afal pisha omru, ein megadlim behemadaka. Even though the Braisa established that you are enjoined from raising these animals in Eretz Yisrael, avol, nevertheless, megadlim behema gasa. The larger areas, which is called natzon, but the larger animals, which is called natzon, but bakar, those are permitted, even in Eretz Yisrael and even in a makom yishuv, because even though they might be mafsid the yishuv of Eretz Yisrael, and really these animals likewise should have been included in the Iser that might lead to the eating of the animals in grazing of the animals in pasture areas where they're not supposed to be, but nevertheless this was too much. This was already beyond the pale, beyond the red line. Lefi she'ein gozrim gzera alatzibur. Ela im kein rov hatzibur yicholim lamod ba. When Chazal made the takonos and the gzeros, there was a built-in set of rules, almost a limitation, restricting it because of checks and balances. Sometimes the gzera, although it is justified, but would go too far, and the tzibur cannot observe and implement that gzera. And therefore, behema daka, says the braisa, in the case of smaller animals, the people in Eretz Yisrael could possibly live up to that gzera, live up to that enactment and that restriction. Why? Efsha lahavi michutz laretz. Because the purpose of a behema daka, primarily, not as a work animal, but these smaller animals are used for meat, and it's possible to import meat from chutz laretz. And that would supply amply enough meat for those who live in Eretz Yisrael. But not so with regard to Behema Gasa, which we need not just for purposes of eating its meat, of slaughtering the animal, but these are the animals of burden, these animals that carry burdens, these are animals that work the fields, they do the plowing of the fields. The efshalahavi michutzarts, the transportation, the import from chutzarts is not going to solve your problem, because you need these animals on a regular basis in Eretz Yisrael. It's not like importing animals for the purpose of Shechita. You want some lamb, so you import lamb and you shecht it. No. Here you needed to work the fields. Therefore, Chazal were inhibited here. They could not possibly impose their Isur of raising these behemoths, the behemoth Daka, in Eretz Yisrael. And even though as a result of these animals in Eretz Yisrael, there will be, in fact, Hefseda Yishuv, they will, to some extent, undermine the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. But nevertheless, because Rova Tzireni Chom Lamod Ba, therefore this Isur was suspended, was basically repealed, or if you want to say was never established, never implemented. Interesting to note that Rashi elsewhere, Masechta Sanhedrin, says that Behema Daka is more of a danger, if you will, to undermine Yishuv Haaretz and be mafsid the land, because it's very hard to watch and supervise over these animals, to do and provide a shmirah ma'ula for these animals. These animals have a tendency of running around. They get they're mishtamed, meaning even when you try to control them, they sneak away and they travel into other sodos, and they're mafsid other sodos. In the case of a magasa, which doesn't easily sneak away and jump around, it's more likely, it's more feasible to expect that you can provide a shmirah and protect these animals and prevent them from eating in other pasture areas, and therefore you're allowed to raise them. Again, you have to raise these animals. Let's point this out. This behemoth gasa situation in Eretz Yisrael, raise them in a way that they could be protected. You're not allowed to leave them off hefka to go into the fields of others and graze there, but you keep them homebound and you whittle down the chashash that the other sodos will suffer from them and will suffer loss from them, and you use these animals as work animals in Eretz Yisrael. The Braisa continues, and the Braisa says the following: the Afal Pisha Omru Ein Megadlin Behema Daka, even though the Chacham established a prohibition against raising these smaller animals in Eretz Yisrael, Aval, nevertheless, there are limitations of the Isur, meaning there are permissible situations in which the Chachamim said that Isur does not apply, and you're allowed to raise a Behema Daka in Eretz Yisrael. And this is during the time of Aliyah LeRegel, before the three major Regolim, is Masha Hu Kodem LeRegel Shloshim Yom. For the mitzvah of Aliyah LeRegel, the people of Israel had to be Makriv Karbonos from Tzon, from these small Behema Daka animals, and we had to allow the people of Israel before the regel, up to, we'll see, a period of Shloshim Yom, a 30-day period, to purchase animals and raise them within that period of time, beginning Shloshim Yom before the regel. Again, every regel, in a sense, we halachically recognize a period of time prior to the regel which is connected to the regel. That's when we learn the halachas of the regel. There's a mitzvah Talmud Torah to prepare for the regel, the drushos of Chazal, that Shloshim Yom Kodem Lachag. So the regel, in a sense, extends 30 days before the regel. And during that period of time, it was permissible for a person to purchase animals, this kind of Behema Daka, and raise them so that when the regel would come around, they would have these animals for purpose of Aliyah, for the purpose of Hakrovas Karbonos of Aliyah LeRegel. Then we have another category in which, once again, for a 30-day period, a person was allowed to raise these animals locally in Eretz Yisrael. Hamasi es bino, if he's marrying off a son and he's setting up, he's preparing a banquet, what's called a sudas nisuin, because marriage, nisuin, engenders a chiyuv simcha, which is reflected and fulfilled through a seuda. He's got to shecht animals, in this case small animals like lamb and sheep. And for the purpose of shechita, of preparing the tzon for the sudas nisuin, they allowed him to purchase these animals, kodem mishta beno, for a period of time before the nisuin of his son, shloshim yom. So from 30 days before the nisuin, let's say the invitations went out a month before the wedding, from that moment to time when the invitations were in the mail, that's when they were allowed to raise these animals to prepare them for the sudas nisuin. However, the Braisa stipulates, with regard to both of these last cases, Kodem L'Regel and Kodem L'Mishta B'no, Shelo Yasheh Es HaAchrona Shloshim Yom. In other words, if he's buying animals and raising them within the period starting with 30 days and on, well, there are certain animals that are going to be purchased a little bit later, as we get closer to the Yom HaMishta, the Yom HaRegel. And you might think, well, let's give him and guarantee him a 30-day period from the moment he purchased the animal until he finally slaughters the animal. No. The Braisa stipulates that we're not going to give you a 30-day extension from the moment that you bought the animal, but rather the limitation, the termination date, is going to be the regel itself, or the Mishta B'no itself. So in certain cases, he wouldn't have a whole 30-day period of allowance to raise the animal. He might have a considerably shorter period of time, and he would be raising these animals, these small animals, up until the time of Shechita, which means up until the regel itself, or the Yom Mishta B'no. The Rashba points out something here that's very important, it'll come up a little bit later in the sugya on Daf Pei, and that is that this heter to raise these animals, these behemadakas, for the purpose of X or Y, that permissibility, that permit, is limited to raising them in the house. It doesn't mean he has carte blanche of a heter to raise them in such a way that they go out into the fields and graze in the fields. He's allowed to do something which normally he would not be allowed to do under normal circumstances. Even to raise them in the house would not be permissible because we're afraid they'll go out into the fields. But here, they allowed him to raise it homebound, you know, in a very domesticated way for the purpose of the mitzvah of regel or mishta b'no sudas nisuin. The Gemara now explains why did the Braisa have to emphasize the limitation of Yom HaRegel and make sure that even the later animals that are brought purchased close to the Regel should be done away with, should be shechted by the Regel. Salkadait Kaminai would have thought that perhaps there was an automatic 30-day allowance to eat Nafikle Regel, even if the Regel passed. But Michei Zavnat Asher, from the moment that he purchased the animal until now, is Akati Lo Molule Tolsin Yom, 30 days haven't passed, so I might think we have an allowance of 30 days from the date of the purchase of the animal, and up to, but not beyond the 30-day period from the purchase date, he's allowed to shech these animals and leave them beyond the regel. And therefore the Bryce wants to tell us, Lo Nema Tolsin Mishra Shari Leleshuye, that he's allowed under all circumstances, guaranteed, a 30-day period from the day of purchase. No. Ella, but rather the Bryce wants to tell us, came in the Nafikle Regel, once the Regel has terminated at the end of the 7-day period, Lo Mi Boy Leleshuye, he's no longer allowed to maintain these animals in his possession. He's not allowed to be Masha the animals. And we see quite clearly that the Iser here is not just defined in terms of purchasing the animals for the purpose of raising them, but the actual ownership of the animals. To maintain the ownership and leave the animals in your reshus, that itself is included in the prohibition. There was a heter for the 30-day period up to but not beyond the regel and mishta b'no. After that, the Iser Shehiya applies. And now we turn to Daf Pei Amud Aleph, and we're going to see a further case of a heter permitting raising these smaller animals, the behemadakas, in Eretz Yisrael. And the Braisa says, V'tabach, V'atabach. A tabach is an individual who makes his livelihood by purchasing animals, usually bought on a yom, what's called the Yom HaShuk, as Rashi points out here. There's a market day. And Tosfos goes a step further and he says, forget about the market day, but a tabach who's a professional shochet, he buys animals, slaughters them, and sells its meat, is generally used to buying animals in groups. You know, he buys them in groups, he gets a cheap price when he buys a larger unit, not individual animals. And in such cases, the Braisa says, lokeach, he's allowed to purchase these behemoth dakos even in Eretz Yisrael, v'shochet, and he can shech them, and lokeach v'shoeh, he may also, you know, instead of shechting them in a short period of time, immediately after the purchase, he may hold on to them and shech them piecemeal over a period of time, so he can sell them a little bit later on, and it may even be after 30 days have passed since the kniyah, that's the special het of a tabach, this professional, ubilvad shelo yashe ha'aguna shebahen shloshim yom. And what does this mean? So the phrase, if left unqualified and unlimited, lokeach v'shoeh, those two words would indicate that the chiddush here of the tabach goes beyond the cases that we had before of regel and mishteh bno. Lokeach v'shoeh. Shoeh means that he shechts him when he's ready to sell the meat, whenever, as long as it takes. But now the Braisa adds a restriction. Ubilvad, you can't just read the words lokeach v'shoeh alone, as we wanted to do, but ubilvad, there is a limitation. Lo yisheh es haguna shebohem ad shloshim yom. In other words, the same limitation of 30 days that applied earlier in this price applies here in with regard to the aguna. The aguna means the one that he purchased later. Rashi explains already in his Pirush on Rus, where it says halahen ti agna, that Rus turns to her two daughters-in-laws and says, you shouldn't delay your remarriage because of my sons, meaning your husbands. And the word tiagna means delay, me'uchar. And here also, if within this period of time, there are a certain number of animals that weren't shechted yet, you know, the tabach is busy shechting and selling. And now, let's say, for example, on the Yom HaShuk, the way Rashi had interpreted this price, he purchased a large number of animals before the Yom HaShuk, even 30 days before the Yom HaShuk. Once the 30-day period ends, he's got to shech the animals. And Rashi learns, ubilvad shel yishes haguna shebehen, that last animal that he bought very close to the Yom HaShuk, shloshim yom, you know, it's up to the Yom HaShuk and not beyond. But Tosfos here quotes a Tosefta. The Tosefta says that we give him a 30-day period of time from the moment that he purchased the animal. So again, according to Rashi, there's a new halacha called Yom HaShuk, which parallels the previous halacha of Regel and Yom Sudas Nesuin. That is the last day. Beyond that, he's not allowed to purchase, he's not allowed to hold on to these animals and raise them until the next Yom HaShuk comes around. And the limitation rule here is the Yom HaShuk. Tosfos, on the other hand, understands that here, in this particular case of the tabuk, they gave him a 30-day period of time. And if there are certain animals from the group that he had to bought in order to sell them, that entire large group, there's certain animals that he hasn't yet got around to shechting and selling, will give him a full 30-day allowance from the moment, from the day on which he purchased these animals until he has to shech them. Now the Gemara brings a dissenting view of Rabbi Gamliel with regard to raising animals in Eretz Yisrael. Sholu Talmidov es Rabbi Gamliel, mahu legadel. And again, we're talking about Behemoth Daka. Are you allowed to raise them? Omalem mutar. This is a bit of a strange curveball here. Is Rabbi Gamliel denying and objecting to everything that we learned until now? The Gemara says, "Vatanan, we have in a Mishnah, Ein Megadlin, we're not allowed to raise these Behemadakas in Eretz Yisrael, Hachi Kami Boile." Let's reinterpret the question that was raised to Rabbi Gamliel. Mahu Lishos. Is a person allowed to maintain his ownership over the animals that he purchased, these behemadakas that he purchased in Eretz Yisrael, even beyond the regel, a full 30-day period of time, again, with the stipulation that he raised them in his house, as we saw in the Rashba, Amolahen Mutar. He says that as long as he's living up to the rules, the restrictions, he has the animal under strict supervision, bound to the house, as it were, tied down to the bedposts in his house, then he's allowed to hold on to these animals even beyond the regel. And the impression I get here is that this allowance of Rabbi Gamliel, as opposed to what we saw in our Mishnah, goes beyond the 30-day period, even beyond the regel, as long as it's kosher b'kari amito. And therefore, if you take a look in Rashi Dimaskal Ella, he postulates a machlokas here between the Braisa that we had before, the Chachamim, and Rabbi Gamliel. The Chachamim were matir it only up to 30 days. They didn't allow tying the animal down to the bedposts in the house. And Rav Gamliel is going to allow you to do that and raise these animals in Eretz Yisrael, even though it's Behemah Daka, and even though it's beyond 30 days and beyond the regal. However, Tosfos Divrei Maskil Mahu disagrees with Rashi. He's not willing to recognize the machlokas here between the Chachamim and Rav Gamliel, but rather, says Tosfos, the Talmidim asked Rav Gamliel, are you permitted lahashos kodim laregel? Do you accept the heter, the leniency of the Chacham Rabbi Gamliel, that before the regel you're allowed to keep these animals in your possession? Vehito lahem, he allowed them. But the question is, did he go beyond that and say, well, I'm only going to allow this heter if and when he ties it down to the mitah? Says Tosfos, the intention of Rav Gamliel was not to be matel lehem l'shehiya more than 30 days, but rather what he said to them was that this was their derech, as if to say the allowance is only up to 30 days, as the Chachamim said it, but do it the way you're supposed to do it, and tie it down to the bedposts. So again, just to summarize, we have here Machlok Shin Rashi and Tosfos had to understand Rav Gamliel's position. Rashi says that through the heter of kosher b'kari amita, Rav Gamliel get established and presented a kind of carte blanche heter to allow raising these animals in Eretz Yisrael, and that's against the Chachamim Shita that were very strict, and they said the only heter is that 30-day period before the regel. Tosfos, on the other hand, says that even Rabbi Gamliel was limiting his heter within the 30-day period, just that he encouraged them to do it the way they should be doing it, and that is by tying it down to the bedpost. Tana Rabbanan, Maisa Bechasid Echad. It's interesting how the Mefarshim here are interested in revealing exactly the exact identity of who this Chassid Echad is, maybe because the Gemara is going to talk about his wife and so forth and so on, whether it's Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, and that's the Yushalmi, or perhaps it's Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Eloi. This was a Chassid, Shaya Goneach. He was in a state of absolute anguish. He was crying out of pain, mipnei libo. Libo means kev halev. He was suffering tremendously. And apparently they didn't know exactly what the cause of his choli was. Why was he so ill? Now exactly how ill he was, this is going to be a machlokas here between the Me'iri, believe it or not, and the Marsha. The Me'iri claims that he was a cholish yeshbo sakana. That's how bad the pain was. His life was in the balance. And the Marsha disagrees. He says, we're talking about a cholesh ein bo sakana. In any event, what did the Rofim prescribe? Shalul Rofim, they went to the best of the professional doctors, the physicians for Yomra, and they recommended ein lo takana. The only way that he could save himself from this dangerous situation, this terrible pain that he's in. And here you have the insight of the Nachas Moshe, who's more famous for his work on Bava Basra, but he has also insights into Bava Kama. He wants to suggest that what the Rofim was saying, Ein lo takonat she yinok cholav eiz baboker, which means that according to the Meiri, the Rofim was saying that he won't continue to live unless he does the following. This is the recommendation, or the Marsha means he won't be healed from his machla unless he does this. Ad sheyinak cholav roseach mishachris l'shachris. Now, if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says, Divrei HaMashchil list him, which is a little bit later on, it's about 10 lines down from the top. Ro'eh b'sod sachem v'gozel es harabim. We'll get back to that Rashi in just a minute, because that's going to be the objection of the colleagues of this chassid. But in terms of what exactly were the Rofim recommending, it says, Achiyinak cholav roseach, and literally means from the udders of this goat, he would have to drink from hot milk on a regular daily basis. Vevilo eis, and they brought him a goat. Now, a goat is a problem of having this goat in Eretz Yisrael. V'koshulo bekaria mita, but l'chora they avoided any sort of a violation, at least according to Rabbi Eliezer, the way Rashi understood Rabbi Gamliel. This would not be okay according to the Chachom of Rabbi Gamliel. But maybe perhaps they allowed it for the sake of Pikuach Nefesh, at least according to the Meiri. Vayonek mimena mishachris l'shachris. On a daily basis, he would suckle from this goat. Liyomim later on, nichnesu chavera flavakro. They heard that he was sick, so his colleagues came in to visit him. But kevin shero osaha eiz kshru v'kari amita, they didn't know exactly what the physicians had prescribed, and they saw that the goat was tied there to the chazri amita, the kari amita, and in their opinion, and apparently the accepted custom was not to allow raising a goat in Eretz Yisrael. Goats are good for Poland and Lithuania, but not for Eretz Yisrael. Is chazu l'chorehem. They really wanted to leave the house. It's sort of like an act of protest. They were indignant. V'yomru listim mizuyam. Whoa. This A's, Rashi explains, and that's the Rashi that we quoted earlier, is considered like a listim mizuyam. I don't know if it means the A's itself or the owner of the A's, but this is a kind of a list of Mizuyan situation, because it's impossible to just tie down a goat and assume it won't go out and graze in the fields of others, and it's going to steal from the pasture of others. And again, the Chachomim are worried that even though you tie it down to the bed, it's going to wiggle its way out. It's going to break out of the kesher and go and eat from Yenim's pasture. And that's what it says, Listim mizuyan bebeso shel zeh, that this animal, this goat, is like a thief, so to speak, that is lurking and being maintained and raised in the house of this chassid. Ve'anu nechnosim etzlo, and we're coming to visit him. And then, Yoshvu ubadku, they had a little bit of a calming down period of time. They started slowing down and investigating carefully what is the nature of this chassid and his ma'isiv. Elo matzu bo, they couldn't find any sins. Elo oso avon shel osa ha'es. The only thing that was illegal, was in a sense a violation of the Torah, was holding on to this goat that was tied down to the bedpost. And that would be a violation of the Issa that the Chacham instituted of raising a Beis Medak in Eretz Yisrael. And in fact, v'afhu, even this chassid, b'shas misoso omar, he sort of had a vidui on his deathbed, and he declared, yodea anisha ein bi'ovan ala ovan osa ha'ez sha'avarti al divrei chaverai, that by tying down this goat to my bedpost, I have violated the words of chaverai of the Chachamim. Now, l'chora, this is very difficult. Why should the chumrah of gidul be'medakaber still apply here in this case? After all, we're talking about a chashash of pikuach nefesh, certainly according to the Meiri. And it's very possible that the Marsha, based on this gemara, proved he was compelled to reject the Meiri and to insist that we're not talking about a cholash yesh bo sakana, but rather cholash ein bo sakana. So according to the Meiri, that he was crying out in pain, and this was his only healing process, was to save his life by having this A's around. It doesn't seem that that would be overridden by the Iser of Gidul Bei Medaka in Eretz Yisrael. The Meiri says that Dover HaNesar Mikoch Takona Shenitkena Machmas Hefseid, a Takona which was instituted as an Iser, and for what purpose? To prevent the loss of yenims, of somebody else's money, of his possessions, his pasture, is royal ahachmir bo yoser afilu mokum pikuach nefesh. Now, frankly speaking, I'm not sure exactly what this means. If what the Meiri is saying is that if the A's breaks loose and eats from Yenim's pasture, then the chola, even though he's a chola sheish bo sakana, would have to pay and reimburse for that loss, that I can understand. Like, for example, the sugya of stealing something for the sake of pikuach nefesh, where the Gemara establishes that it's also meaning that you have to pay back. In any event, the Marsha is so hard pressed by this question: how is anybody accusing others or the chassid or the chassid of himself of guilt for a crime when he's a cholish yesh bo sakon? It must be that he was a cholish ein bo sakon. And the Marsha writes, lo hayolo lahatir zos me'atz li'atzmo. He shouldn't have set himself up as an exception and take himself out of the general Easter and be matirit. It could be that when the Marsha is implying that if the Chachamim were consulted here, they as a group could have said, this is a case in which we want to set it up as an exclusion case outside of the purview of this Easter. Amar Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael made a statement about the nature and the scope of punishments for someone who violates this Isur of Gidul Bei Medaka in Eretz Yisrael. And he has a list of three different prohibitions, the third of which is our sugya. And he writes, Mi balabatim shebegolil ha'elyon. He says that he heard from very chashuva people who lived in the upper Galilee, Hayim Beis Abba, and amongst them were members of my family, Umipnei Mach Chorvu, and that area which was settled in the north by my people, he says, was destroyed. And for what sin? Shayu Marim Bechorshim Donim Dinim Momenos Biyachid. The afal pishayu lahem chorshim chorashim somach lebateyem is sadek tana haisa mavirin derech oleho. So the first avera here that is mentioned is marim es behemtom, meaning behemadaka, becharshin, in the aros. We'll come back to that in a minute, because lechora, in the case of the fields, we're not talking about a populated area. There's no yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Why would this be asur? Secondly, v'danin dinei mamonos biyachid, meaning yachid mumche, that an expert would judge a case alone without two other dayanim joining him to form a bezdin. And the Gemara explains at the beginning of Sanhedrin that even though technically a yachid mumcha is allowed to judge dini mamonos monetary cases alone if he's a yachid mumcha, but nevertheless, it's not advisable, and rather roy lechatchil chol chacham limshoch yado mikach. And no matter how great of a chazak does he have, he should avoid doing so. The Miri says that if he's muchzak b'kach lekulam, if everybody recognizes him as the expert yachid mumcha, that he's allowed to judge. The Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin Perek Beis quotes the Mishnah in Avos, al tehi don yichidi, a person should not judge alone, meaning one person. And the only Dan Yechidi is HaKadosh Baruch himself. And l'chatchila, a person should make sure that there are three Dayanim, even if he himself is a mumcha, to add two more Dayanim to judge the case and set up a bezdin. And the statement of Rabbi Yishmael about the destruction of the Balabatim Sheba Goliel goes on and says, Afal pisha hayulem charshim somech lebatehem, even though these forest areas were located very close to their homes, and therefore we said that with regard to forest areas, you're allowed to raise these beimadakas in Eretz Yisrael. So why were they punished? Sadek tana hoysa umavirin derech oleha. There was, located somewhere between the stretches of forest area, there was a field. Now, here we have Machlokas Rishonim regarding the status of this field that's mentioned here in Rabbi Shmuel's statement. Rashi learns that this field was privately owned, and therefore when they would lead the animals from one forest area to the other through this privately owned small field, there would be a possibility of gezel. And I see this in Rashi, where he says, Nenshu mibnesha sadak talois b'neva shal achirim hoysa, and it was belonged by others, meaning not by these Beis Abba people who lived in the Gola Elyon. However, the Ravid says that this field was owned privately by the Bnei Abba, the Beis Abba. And nevertheless, they were punished. And why so? We've been dealing over and over again with the nature of this Issa as an Issa Gezel. And the answer is, says the Ravid, Mipnei Shehoysa Behema Mafsida Es Hazroim. In other words, there's a hefsed here to the Zroim, and that itself is something that has to be avoided. And frankly speaking, my impression is that we're not talking about Gezel, because how could it be that Rabbi Shmuel's relatives of the Zikne Beis Abba, the Anshe Beis Abba, would be grazing their animals in the pasture and that belong privately to someone else. But no, the chiddush here is that even if it belonged to them, that itself is still prohibited. I don't think it's because of altashchis. I mean, they may have cheshbon that in order to get the animals from one grazing area to the other, from one forest area to the other, they had to go through their sada. But it sounds like that's the nature, or at least one dimension, of the nature of Iser Glegadel Be'medaka Be'eretz Yisrael, that the hefsed of the Zeroyim of Eretz Yisrael is itself something that's prohibited. And the Yishuv Eretz Yisrael requires growing in a very healthy way until the harvest, the fruits and the grains, etc. of Eretz Yisrael. The Asafta Degonecha, the Pasuk says. So we have to work the land and grow the land, and that's also part of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So even though the Issa Gezel was absolutely avoided here. Nevertheless, there was a violation of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. That's according to the Ravid. The simple pshat again of Rashi would be that although, what Rabbi Shmuel is saying is, although there was a heter to graze your animals in Yaros, in the Churshin, in these forest lands that were hefker, but nevertheless, if there are fields in close proximity, in the close area around, then it's prohibited. And therefore, the Beis Abba, the Anshei Beis Abba up in the Gola Elyon should have been absolutely more careful about these Behemoth Dakas, because since there were fields in the general area in close proximity to the forests, then the Isur applies even to a forest area. But the main point for our sugya is that the severe punishment for violation of the Isur Drabonon of Gidul Behemoth Daka in Eretz Yisrael is clearly demonstrated by Rabbi Shmuel, as it was by the story before that of the Chassid Echad. Now, the Gemara wants to ask, well, what is the takana, what is the tshuva for someone who violated this Isur Tana Rabbanan? We learned in a brisa, Roeh, a shepherd, who raised animals of Dakos in Eretz Yisrael and violated this Isur, Sheh, Asa tshuva. Now he comes to do tshuva for his sin, and he no longer wants to raise these animals in Eretz Yisrael. So what do? You might argue, let's force him immediately to sell all his animals, his every last sheep in the herd. Is the brisa says, Ein mechayven oso limko. We have to, in some way, entice him or make it easier for him to do tshuva. We've seen this already in Ganav with Takonis HaShovim. Here it's Ein mechayven oso limko miyad, ela mocher al yad, which means, instead of forcing him and requiring in the context of tshuva to sell all his very last animal immediately, you know, now who's going to buy and at what price? Well, I shouldn't say who's going to buy. Everyone's going to buy his animals, the goyim or whatever it is, and they're going to pay a cheap price. They realize how desperate he is. So therefore, they gave an allowance here to entice and encourage the raw to do tshuva, and they said, you know what? Sell your animals one at a time. Take your time. No one can say that you're hard-pressed and you'll lower the price and get bottom barrel. We're going to prevent you from having to be forced in a situation of hefsed. People are going to see that you have to sell it all immediately. They're not going to buy it for you unless you lower your price. And that's going to be a hefsed. So therefore, to entice him to do tshuva, we're going to ask him to sell ma'at ma'at, a little bit of a time, and to avoid a hefsed and get rid of the animals. V'chein ger, a similar story we have in the case of a ger, she, again, while he was a guy before he became a ger, is naflu lo klovim v'chazir b'shoso, his father or other relatives died and left him to inherit klovim, dangerous dogs, or chazirim that he's not allowed to have in Eretz Yisrael, as we saw in the Mishnah on Daf Ayin Tesamid Beis. And now the ger, within the context of his conversion, has to sell to the goyim all these klovim and chazirim. Ein mechayven oso limkar miyad. We're not going to force him to sell the entire inheritance of all these dogs and pigs, you know, sell them all in one fell swoop. Let's go easy on him. They made a special license and a special permission. Ela mocher al yad, he can sell it piecemeal, one at a time. The Nachas Moshe that we mentioned earlier wonders, Madua lo tzrichu shalafachas yikshar ksavim b'shalsheles. He says that certainly there's no question that as he's holding on to these animals until he can get the fair price, selling them as it were one by one, he's obviously required to guarantee any sort of shmira and prevent any sort of hezek to other fields. That's beyond a doubt. V'chein, where else do we find a certain lenience of a similar nature. Misha nadar likach bayis v'likach isha b'eretz Yisrael. He took upon himself a neder to purchase a house and marry a woman in Eretz Yisrael. Now, the day after he lands on Aliyah in Eretz Yisrael with nefesh b'nefesh, are we going to say, well, find yourself a house and a wife? Ein mechayven oso likach miyad. He doesn't have to buy the first piece of property that, you know, that he sees with a for sale sign, or right, or marry the first woman who comes along. Give it time. You know, let's not force him immediately to fulfill his neder. And what we want to do here is encourage people to take upon themselves those commitments for a neder l'dvar mitzvah, if they'll see that Beis Din is compelling him to quickly fulfill his neder and immediately purchase the first house that he can find and marry the first woman that he finds. Other people are going to be very inhibited about taking upon themselves a similar neder. Umaisa. And the Gemara tells a story. The Isha, Achas, there was a widow, Shahaya b'na Meitzar La. Her son was really disturbing her tremendously. She was going through a very tense, anguished period with raising her son. V'kovta v'nishba, she took a shvua. Shekol mi sheyovo eidi machziroso, as soon as a suitor comes along to offer me his hand in marriage, I will not say no to him. I would agree to marry him because he'll help me with my son. Kofzu ole b'nei odom she'enem mugonim. And people started presenting their candidacy to marry her. These were not people who she would want to marry under normal conditions. The question came from the Chacham, should we be mechayev her to fulfill her shvu and marry the first guy that came along, even though he's not really marriage material? Amru, the Chachamim determined that this shvu is not committing her to marry the first guy that came along. She had in mind to marry a person who's fitting for marriage, who's appropriate as a marriage partner. And even though we learned in the Gemara Kiddushin, Mem Tes Amid Beis, Dvarim Shebaleveinam Dvarim, however there's a something called Umdana Demuchach, the circumstances are quite clear. We know that this was her kavana. This woman does not want to marry the first guy who comes along, even if he's a menuval, even if he's a mukashchin, he's the lowest of the low. Certainly, she wants to wait until she can find a person that's hagun la. Another halacha with regard to Balei Chayim, about raising animals, kishem shamru ein megadlim bei medaka. We are enjoined from raising tzon in Eretz Yisrael because we don't want to cause a hefseid to the yishuv. They'll eat the zroim of sozkach omru, so too ein megadlim chayadaka. Now we're talking not about a behema daka, but a chaya daka. Like, for example, a shul, a fox is a chaya, and a gazelle or a deer is also a chaya. And these two should not be raised in Eretz Yisrael. And apparently here too we have a certain danger if we allow raising these animals in Eretz Yisrael. Shmuel Omer, Megadlim, Klovim, Kofrim, but small dogs that are very, you know, very close to the ground, they're not very tall, is that you're allowed to raise in Eretz Yisrael. V'chatulim, and certain, we'll see certain kinds of cats, V'kofin, certain kinds of monkeys, Chuldos, Snoim, we'll have a whole discussion about what Chuldos Snoim is, but in all these cases, the halacha was lenient and allowed you to raise them in Eretz Yisrael, even though there is a certain element of danger here. But why? What's the pressing need for this license, for this permissibility? Every, you know, in the ecological system, you know, we certainly need certain pests around because they get rid of worse pests. And lenaker means they clean up the house. Rashi explains, Minak Barim, from the mice, you know, the mice run away from the cats, or from these various kinds of chuldos, you know, weasels. And the Meiri adds that they'll clean up the house from various kinds of toloim and shrotzim, various kinds of bugs and crawling creatures that we want to get rid of. The smaller animals eat up the smaller animals, and therefore we're allowed to leave them around, and hopefully they won't cause, although there is a possibility, but they won't cause any hefse to the yishuv, but rather they will benefit mankind by getting rid of the small pests. The Gemara asks, "My chuldos snoim? What are these weasels that are described as snoim?" And the Gemara answers, "Some Rabbi Yehuda, there are two names for them in Aramaic, but they're both the same. Shirtza charza ikadiamri, shirtza charza." Now, why are these chuldos called charza or charza? And the answer is that word charza describes ktine shake, that the thighs of the legs are very thin, and therefore charitzosa nikarim, you can see their paws on their feet, and the raya bene vardine, and these chuldos noim, so called, are they graze amongst the small trees, the bushes, the lone sneh, and shirtza. What does the word shirtza mean? It means a sheretz demitztatoi shake, that has very short legs, and therefore it almost crawls on the ground. And these are the kinds of weasels that will clean up the mice and the other kinds of bugs that could attack and really be a major pest. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Asinu Atzmenu B'Bavel Ke'eretz Yisrael, meaning that if we postulate two dimensions to the nature of Isur and the motivation of the Chacham to establish this Isur being Megadel B'Medakin Eretz, so one is Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah of Yishuv, the other is to prevent any sort of loss and a kind of List of Mizuim Gzela situation, then from the perspective of the latter, even in Chutz La'aretz, without the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, Lebei Medaka, we should be noeg, we should accept upon ourselves, and that's what he recommended, an Isur from raising these animals. Even though these animals might not be dangerous on a physical level, you know, we're not talking about a wild dog with rabies, no, we're talking about more or less docile animals, but they eat from the pastures of others. And Rav Yehuda Marav is talking about Bavel here, and Bavel, in that sense, from the perspective of pasture, other pasture lands of Jews and Gzela and Hefsed, Eretz is like Eretz Yisrael. And the reason for this is that from the moment of Golus Bavel, which is otherwise known as Golus Yechonya, when so many Jews left the Cherish of the Mazgir, as described in Malachim Beis, and came to settle in Bavel, the Chachamim Gedolim of the Torah generation, the Gemara says in Gittin, came to Bavel, that's where the center of Torah was at that time, and they settled in that area. And that's where, says Rav, we have to be careful not to raise these animals that will inevitably cause a loss of grazing areas, a loss of money to other Jews living in the close vicinity. Amalei Rav Ado bar Ava l'Rav Huna didach mai. Why is it that you, Rav Huna, raise animals, what we call a Bei Medaka, even though the Iser has been accepted to be careful even in Bavel? Amalei didan kaminter elahu Chova, my animals are under careful and strict supervision by Chova. Chova is my wife. And therefore, I don't have to worry. I can be totally reliant on my wife's expertise. I don't have to be concerned about the possibility that my animals may go ahead and damage the fields of other Jews. And at the surface of it, this is a pella. How could Rav Huna exclude himself from the din? Meaning, the Mishnah says, also legado be medaka beretz Yisrael. The Chacham accepted upon themselves to extend this Eisur applied in Jewish, highly populated Jewish areas in Bavel. How could he go ahead and be makil on something which for everyone else is Asur? How could he rely on his wife? And the Shita Mekubetzes here says that she was so chashuv b'einov, she thought that her mid of chasidus exceeded beyond that of anyone else, and she would guarantee through her careful, meticulous guarding of the animals that it would never chashom come to gezel. Amalei Rav Ada Bar Rava was not happy with this. Chova, he cursed her and he said, Tikverenu b'na livna, that her children would not survive her. In other words, they wouldn't live beyond her life. And the Marsha says that in the Gemara Nazir, it seems to indicate that the reason why Rav Ada Bar Rava imposed such a harsh klola on Chova, the wife of Rav Huna, is not because she was raising these animals in Bavel, but rather because she did what's called Akofas HaRosh on her children. In other words, she actually violated the Isur Baltakiv vis-a-vis her children. And the Marsha suggests that maybe the final decision on the part of Ravi Ada to curse this woman was because she was guilty of two distinct sins. We have a Zevzeh Gorim situation. In other words, there was an Isur Giluach of Baltakiv. That itself alone would not have been enough to initiate this klola. And perhaps that's because Rav Ada Lishitosa holds that a Makif is Rosh HaKotan. He's not Chayiv Malkus. It's not a full-fledged Isur. And also here that she violated, if you will, the accepted takana, the extension of the takana from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, and the combination of these two isurim was enough to engender Rav Ada and his klola to Chova. The Gemara actually tells the story very tragically. Kula shane de Rav Ada Bar Rava. As long as Rav Ada was alive, and the klola therefore was in place, and it was active, and made its impact. Lo ikayim zarel Rav Huna. Rav Huna was not able to keep his children alive, michova, because these were children that were born to Chova, and she was subject to such a harsh curse from Rav Ada during the lifetime of Rav Ada. Tosis offers a few alternative versions of the exact story that happened. One version at the end of Tosfos is that, is it really true that your wife Chova, they asked Rav Huna, is not afraid that perhaps she would have to bury her children because of this Avera, but it didn't really come to the fore, it never really happened. He has a pshat here in the name of Rabbeinu Chananel with a slightly different version of the story, in which the Gemara raises the question, how could it be that she dedicated herself to bury her children? After all, she didn't have time to be involved with the children. She was so busy watching the tzon. But since they mentioned the expression came out of the mouth and it was enunciated that she would bury her children, that's called in the Pasuk in Koheles Perek Yud, Shigiga, Shkoga Yotzeis Milifnei Asholit, and it turned into a klola. Ika di Amri, according to another version, Amarav Hun Amarav Asinu Atzmenu Bibavel Ki Eretz Yisrael Lebei Medaka, that Rav Huna says in the name of Rav that we accepted upon ourselves a chumrah in Bavel, just the same as the chumrah of the Chacham imposed all over Eretz Yisrael, lebehema daka, in order to avoid an Isur Gezel. And when Rav came to Bavel, he immediately established the yeshiva, and there was a great population that gravitated to Bavel, and they settled there. There were fields of Jews, and they were Choshe Shema Tafsid HaBehema, in the fields of other Jews. So in this case, it wasn't Rabbi Yehuda who was telling the story, it was rather Rav Huna that was transmitting this halacha. The Gemara now brings another story in which we have to deal with the question of raising animals of this sort in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Shmuel v'Rav Asi Ikla'u Lebei Shavua HaBen. So there's a group of Talmidei Chachamim who came to the place, a house apparently, at the time of a Bris Milah. Shavua Ben means after 7 days pass, the eighth day is the day of the Bris Milah. The Amri Le Hira Daf Peyom and Aleph, at the bottom, we have another version that says they came together, these Chachamim, Lebei Yeshua HaBen, which might mean, and that's the way Rashi understood it, to the house of a pigeon HaBen. They were doing a mishta. It seems from Rashi that the mishta was for a pigeon HaBen, not for a milah, at the time of the pigeon HaBen. And the question is, who would go in? We have Rav. Who would go in first? We have Rav, we have Shmuel, and we have Rav Asi. And it's interesting that the Gemara mentions Rav Asi as third on this list. Actually, Rav Asi was greater than Shmuel. In any event, what happened? Lo ayel kami de Shmuel. Rav, lo ayel kami de Shmuel means Rav was inhibited, he was hesitant, he didn't want to go in to the house before Shmuel. He wanted to give cover to Shmuel. The Gemara will explain why. And now we turn to Pei Amid Beis. Ushmuel lo ayel kami de Rav Asi. But Shmuel didn't want to go into the house before Rav Asi, who was greater than him. Rav Asi was a gadol, greater than Shmuel. Rav Asi, on the other hand, was a Talmud of Rav. Lo ayel kami de Rav. He didn't want to go into the house before Rav. So all these Chachamim in this round robin are in a funny situation. No one wants to go in. Amri, and it sounds like the Chachamim had a whole discussion, a whole diyun over there. Man Nisrach. Who should go in first and who should go in last? Nisrach means Yisacher. Who should come in at the end? And they decided that Nisrach Shmuel will wait, Venese Rav Rav Asi. Let Rav and Rav Asi go in first. And the reason for that is that Rav Asi was greater than Shmuel, but Rav was greater than Rav Asi. So you couldn't allow Rav Asi to go in without Rav, because Rav Asi is a Talmud of Rav. In any way, Nisrach, you know, during this entire period of time, there was a delay. Rav o Rav Asi. And the Gemara now says that, you know, there was a svara to say that Rav shouldn't go in before Shmuel. Again, we don't know exactly why. And the Gemara says that Bedinu, they came to the conclusion that Rav and Rav Asi should go in before Shmuel. Shmuel's the Katan Shebahem. But Rav did not want to enter in to this Bris Milah, this Pidgin HaBen, before Shmuel. Milsa v'alma hu di'ovid lei l'Shmuel. The Gemara says that Rav wanted to do an act of gedul and covet of dignity and honor to Shmuel, not because really Shmuel should go in first, but rather mishuma hu maisa delite Adbre Rav Ale. There was a story in which Rav cursed Shmuel, and from that time and on, Rav accepted on upon himself to give cover to Shmuel and to make sure that Shmuel would go in first before Rav b'chol mokom in any event. And this Maisa, which is recorded in the Gemara in Shabbos, was that when Rav came by boat from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, then Ircho Shmuel Bebeso, Shmuel hosted Rav in his house in Bavel, and Shmuel was a rofe, and Shmuel wanted to apply medical practice to Rav. And what did he do? Nasan lo lechol v'lishtos dvar mishal shalim. Shmuel gave certain kinds of foods to Rav that were laxative in nature, and he didn't show him where the Beis HaKisei is so that he could go and do what he asked to do. And therefore, Rav made a statement, Misha tziroshi lo yiskaimu bonov. He who caused me such tsar, he will lose his children. And that's exactly what happened. And the children of Shmuel never survived during the life of Shmuel. The Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Ches goes through many other details of that Maisa, which has to be understood as a sugya unto itself. In any event, since Rav did not want to go in before Shmuel, Ada Hachi Uhachi, during this entire period of time, while they were delaying and trying to work out who's going to go in first, a terrible thing happened. Asa Shunra, a cat came along, Kate Liyada Di Inuka, and it attacked this child. Again, I don't know if it was a child on its 8th day or a child on its 30th day. And Nafak Rav Vidarish, as a result of this attack against the child was severely injured. Rav went out and he blasted the following halacha. Chasul mutal hargo. Number one, you're allowed to kill a cat. Even though, again, the cat did not kill the child, but apparently the child was so seriously injured, and because the cat was not tied up and chained in a way that it should have been, it may have the potential in other cases, other snares, to kill a child. And not only that, people are not such experts, they're not so careful to take guard and distance themselves from a cat, and therefore there's a special sakona in the case of a cat. And therefore, even if the cat was not guilty of killing someone, it's not a shara niskal, nevertheless, it should be put to death. This seems to contradict a statement, by the way, of Reish Lakish and Masech Sanhedrin, that Ariv and Amer v'chayos misukanos is a kodem lahargon zocha. And that applies only to those very, very dangerous animals, like lions and leopards and the like, not to cats. And it would seem that Reish Lakish, although he isolates and enumerates various very dangerous animals, where does Chatul fit into this picture? The concept of, you know, killing the animal is Zocha, its merit is to kill the animal, and Rav seems to apply the same yardstick here in the case of a Chatul. We're going to have to assume that this Chatul, as the Gemara is going to explain a little bit later, is a special dangerous Chatul. It's not clear was whether the people knew how dangerous that particular, you know, to identify that particular chatul, that species, and know how dangerous it was. It could be that people weren't careful. They didn't know to be careful. Then Rav goes on, he says, V'yosu l'kaimo, you're not allowed to maintain possession over this chatul, v'ein bo mishum gezel, and if somebody steals it, he doesn't violate gezel, v'ein bo mishum hoshev aveda l'bailim, there's no mitzvah shavas aveda if this chatul gets lost. And the Gemara is going to ask now, why did Rav have to, in his drasha, have to indicate all these different things? In any event, the language of the Gemara that Rav was doresh this halacha, it doesn't say that he was metaking the halacha as a definite takana. And the Rashba wants to say here that perhaps Rav did make a takana after the maisa happened. In any event, the Gemara asks the following question: V'kevan diamart, since Rav already established mutalahargo, is my new su? Why did he have to go ahead and then afterwards add also lekaimo? If you're allowed to kill it, then certainly it's dangerous enough that you shouldn't be holding on to it. It's literally lo tosim dome veisecha. And the Gemara answers, ma'u detem, I might have thought mutal ahargo, but isura leka. there's a heter to kill it, but you're not obligated to kill it, and therefore there's no absolute iser in holding on to it. No, Rav wanted to say not just mutal ahargo, that there's a heter, green light, but that you're not allowed to keep, you're not allowed to maintain this animal in your possession. Rav should have said tzarech lahargo. That would have been a more appropriate language here. In any event, Amri, the Gemara now asks, Kevan the Amri, according to Rav, that ein bo mishum gezel, that if somebody went ahead and killed this animal, he doesn't violate gzela, is why then my new su ein bo mishum hashavas aved lebailim? In other words, if you are allowed to kill this animal without violating the gezel, certainly you don't have to return it to its owner. Amar avina lioro. You might have thought that, okay, if you find the animal dead and it's no longer dangerous, then you have to return it to the bailim because the skins are worth something, the skin of a cat. Kamashbalon, Rav wants to teach us that we go very far with this. He doesn't even have to return the or to the bailim. It means the bailus of the owner of the cat is completely null and void, even if this cat belongs to a particular person. Nevertheless, there's no iser, there's no bailus. Why? Because he's not allowed to raise this, he's not allowed to hold on to this animal, it's not considered his, there's no gezel, and therefore if there's no gezel and there's no bailus, to whom is he meant to return the skins? Again, you might raise the following question. Since the animal is dead and it can no longer be mazik, why shouldn't return the or to the bailim? And again, quoting the Nachas Moshe, he wants to say that since the bailim violated Isa by holding on to this chatul, they imposed a penalty, a knas on him, that anyone who finds the chatul, even after it's dead, does not have to return even the or to the owner. This is all part of the knas that's imposed upon a person for holding on to this animal. And again, there's a need to kill this animal, and there's no gezel in this animal, and Rav established that you got to get rid of this animal, there's no gezel, it's a danger to society. Meisvei, the Gemara asks, but the Braisa says, we learned it earlier on Amud Aleph, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Megadlin, Klovim, Kofer, if you have these small animals that are very low down, is you're allowed to raise them and maintain ownership on them, v'chatulim, and it says explicitly cats as well, the kofim, v'chul desnoim, all these you're allowed to maintain in your house, and v'chul desnoim ibnei shasuyim lenaker es habayis, and they were lenient in order to get these small, lower animals, creatures to kill some of the pests that had to be removed. And why not apply the same logic to the story of Rav? Lokasha, now the Gemara establishes that Rav's case was a different species, a different category of a chatul, and that was the dangerous one. Habi Uchma, when it comes to the black cats, they belong to a family where we were allowed to raise them, and they would clean up the house for us. Vaha, but rather in the case of Rav and that old story, Bechivara, we're talking about the white cats, and they were very dangerous. That was a species of dangerous cats which had to be prohibited from being raised in the Yishuv. Vaha, Maisa de Rav Uchmahavi, and in fact, the case, that terrible incident that happened, was with a white cat. And that's when Rav went to bat and proclaimed that we're not allowed to raise such a cat. Hasam uchma bar chivara hava. The Gemara has a give and take over here, back and forth. For ha maisa de Rav uchma havi, there were those who testified that, in fact, the case of Rav was a black cat. And then the Gemara is forced to say that even some of the black cats are also dangerous. Hasam uchma bar chivara hava. It all depends on the genetic structure of this cat. And if the cat, although it looks black, but nevertheless it came from the white family, then it is absolutely dangerous. So you could have blacks that are dangerous, but that's because they're really whites. Vami boy, boyle Ravina. The Gemara asks on this answer, but wait a minute, Ravina himself vacillated on this issue. The boy Ravina, Ravina had a suffek, uchma bar chivara mau. What's the status of a black cat who was born to a white cat? Are you allowed to raise such a cat? Is it dangerous? Is it not? Why didn't Ravina come to a conclusion one way or the other based on the story of Rav? And the Gemara answers, Ki komi boy leila Ravina. Ravina was worrying about uchma bar chivara bar uchma. In other words, the case was that it was basically a black cat. It may have had a white mother, but its grandfather or grandmother was black. So it's basically a black cat, but since its mother was white, maybe it could be dangerous. Maisa derav bi uchma bar chivara bar chivarahav. Even though it was a black cat, which l'chora would have been a docile cat, but nevertheless, its parent and its grandparent, its father, its grandfather were all whites, and therefore genetically we can assume, based on those two generations of whites, that it is a white cat fundamentally, and it is a very dangerous cat. Get rid of it, kill it. There's no gzeil, there's no shavas aveda, no batich. The Gemara now brings three dinim. Now, there's a long list of names here, and we'll read them very quickly. Again, we have to mekayim kol ha'omer dov b'shem omro, as maybe gulul yolam. Omer Rav Acha bar Popa, Mishum Rav Abba bar Rabbi Acha bar Popa, in the name of Rabbi Abba bar Popa, Mishum Rabbi Ado bar Popa. It sounds like we're making a siyum on the Masechta, but we're not ready for that yet. We're only in the seventh parak. V'yamrile, according to another version, Omar Rabbi Abba bar Papa Mishum, Rabbi Chiyo bar Papa Mishum. And here we turn to Peyomid Beis, Rabbi Acha bar Papa. V'yamrile, a third version has it, Omar Rabbi Abba bar Papa Mishum, Rav Acha bar Papa Mishum, Rabbi Chanina bar Papa. And here's the list of three dinim. Number one, Masriyim Al Hachichuch. We're now getting involved in the laws of Tsar on Shabbos. In other words, Shabbos is not a day of crying, it's not a day of excessive tchina, supplication, and tefillah, but in the case of Chichuch, which means that there is some sort of a plague that is an impending catastrophe, it's a shechin, and the word chichuch means it causes such irritation to the skin that you have to just scratch all the time, and you have to rub your body in all ways against, you know, hard surfaces and stone and so forth and so on. And in this case, this din in the name of Rabbi Chanina bar Papa is that you're allowed on Shabbos itself to gather the tzibur together for tchinos, for tfilos. You blow the shofros, you blow the chatzotzros, all this as an act of crying out and petitioning, pouring our hearts out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and stimulating the tshuva, the process of penitence and repentance on the part of the tzibur in order to spare us and save us from this impending catastrophe. According to some mefarshim, based on the Gemara Tainus, we're talking about the trua is anenu, adding anenu in tefillah. It's possibly talking about both shofar and chatzotzros. In a case of a tzibur, there's tachnunim, shofros, and chatzotzos have to be added to the tachnunim. This is all in a very urgent state, and in a certain sense, it overrides the Shabbos. The second halacha that was reported in this transmission was videles hanigeles lo bimherati patach. In other words, once things are on the downfall, and there's a bad turn in one's fortune, then a person should continue praying and asking Hashem for rachman, because it's not easy to turn it around in the other direction. And in the metaphor here, once once the Delis is Ninelis, once the door was locked in front of man and possible opportunities for success have been closed and shoved in, because the door was closed in his face, it's not easy to open that door. He needs a great deal of bakasha, of siyata dishmaya, to save himself, because right now in the mareches of the mazel, it's a little bit of a sakana situation, and there's an ilas delis. It's not going to be easy to open that door. Again, we have to involve ourselves in tefillah maisim tovim to open up these gates once again of hatzlocha and yeshua. And the third din that they formulated was valokeach bias. A person buys a guy, a home, be Eretz Yisrael from a guy, and there's a very great urgency to get the contract signed. Is kosvin olav ono? Ono is a word for shtar mechira, a document of sale, a bill of sale. Afilu b'shabbos. Normally, this would not be permitted, but they permitted on Shabbos. We'll soon see they permitted the Easter of Amiro Li'akum Shvus on Shabbos. All for the sake of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, to guarantee that this guy will not back out of the deal. Today it's very relevant in the old city of Jerusalem. If you get a guy to agree to sell his house, make sure that all the documents and the legal papers are signed immediately before the pressure is on him to back down and retract his very magnanimous offer to sell to a Jew. And that's what's going on here. There is a guy who, you know, he's willing to sell it, but he's on his way out, you know, to catch him and get him to sell the land and sign the shtar even on Shabbos itself. Now let's go back to the first of these three dinim, Meisvei, the Gemara Sakasha. There's a brisa that says that any impending doom that Chas V'Shalom jeopardized the community, and the list here is chichuch. Chichuch, again, as we said before, is a kind of boils or shchin that causes a person to itch and scratch himself. Chagav, Zvuv, Tzira, V'yatush, these are various mazikim, very dangerous little crawling creatures or flying creatures that will, hornets and kinds of mosquitoes and so forth and so on, that are very dangerous. I mean, you all know that now they're talking in Florida in certain areas about the dangerous Zika mosquito. And people have already come very close to death in this epidemic. Then we have Shiluach Nechashim Vakrabim. This is a tremendous danger from various serpents and scorpions. And with regard to all of these, all the above, Lo Hayu Masriim Ela Tzoakim. Although they would cry out as individuals to Hashem on Shabbos, but Bitzibur, they would not allow the entire Tzibur to cry out in supplication with this great complicated and complex ceremony that we described before on Shabbos for the sake of Shchin, for the sake of Chichuch. So how do we square this brisa with the previous statement of Rabbi Hanina Bar Papa? Lo kasha, the Gemara says, there's no stira. Kan, the brisa is talking about bilach, kan biyovesh. In other words, what was appearing on the body? What was this plague? If it was shchin, lach, in such a case, it's not an absolute danger situation. It's a big, gigantic nuisance. We're going to allow the yochid to cry out in tefillah, but not the tzibur. But the case of Rabbi Hanina Bar Papa, that's a more dangerous situation. That's called yovesh. That's called a shchin. That's yovesh. It's dry, it's very dangerous, and it's something that could cause what we call shchin poreach abubuos, very similar to the shchin at the time of Mitzrayim. That dry shchin is something that would allow us not only to cry out biyochid, but even for the sake of the tzibur, ad kan pirish rashi. However, the Meiri has the exact opposite interpretation. He thinks that the most difficult form of Shechin is Lach, is the wet one. And that's similar to Mitzrayim. But the Shechin Yavesh, although will allow the Yochid to cry out, but we will not allow the Tzibur, because that's Yavesh is not such a danger to the Tzibur. In any event, the Gemara now quotes Rabbi Yeshua, the Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Shechin Shehevi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitzrim, Lach mi bachutz, v'yavesh mi bifnim. The most dangerous kind of form of shchin, again we have to talk to the dermatologists about this, is the form that has wetness on the outside, that which you can see with the naked eye, but inside, underneath the surface level, it's yavesh. That's the dangerous shchin, and that's the shchin that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought on the Mitzrayim, v'mitzrayim shenemar. And where do we see this in the verse, in the pasuk? It says, Vayehi shchin ababuos, poreach ba'odam ubebehema. The pricha, in which you saw this rash on the outside, was in a place that's nirel adam, and as he could see this kind of babuos that on the outside of the skin that's lach, but underneath it, below the surface, that wasn't poreach ba'adam, that was something hidden to the naked eye, that already was yavesh, that was dry. Moving on to the second din of Deles Hanin Eles Lo Bimherati Potach Maihi, what's the meaning here? Marzucha Omar Lismicha. We're talking about a situation in which the Chachomim wanted to confer Smicha's Chachom on a particular person, make him into a Rav, and then they were prevented from doing so, and it's not going to be easy for them to implement their original plan. It's going to be dochak, it's going to be very, very tricky. And the Shita Mekubetzes quotes the Aruch based on a Gemara in Bava Metzia that tells a story about a certain person. He was the physician of Rebbe of Rebbe Yehuda Nasi. He was called Shmuel Yachinoah, and Rebbe was working very hard to grant smicha to this wise a physician. He was a chacham, he was a baki, and yet somehow Rebbe was prevented from successfully implementing his will. And it's possible that nitrifa lo hashah lo hayu chacham misasvim yachri, couldn't get the entourage together and the necessary amount of people to confer smicha on this person. He first told the person, "Don't be mitztayer." Kevan Sharah es Sifro Shalom Rishon, the Kasuv Bo Sheshmul Yachino Yikra Chacham Velo Rebbe. Don't be depressed about the fact that you won't be called a rabbi, but according to the book of Adam Rishon, you will be called a Chacham rather than a rabbi. That's the divine will. Don't be upset about it. Accept your position in life. Rav Ashi Omar Kol Hameirim Lo. When things are going bad and the evil is decreed upon him from Shamayim, it's not going to be easy to switch this around, and therefore you're going to need a heck of a lot of prayer in order to switch the arrow from down to up. The Bar Shah points out that in many places the Talmidei Chachamim run away from being appointed as a sevara, as some sort of an official, and therefore the fact that they couldn't, for whatever reason, achieve that goal of being appointed was not so evil in their eyes. They would run away from it. And Rav Ashi says, "Kol ha'meriim lo." In other words, if they were pushed off from getting the sevara, and if a person is mitztayer on kach, he thinks that this is a ra. Is lo metivim lo b'mehera. That's not going to. He's not going to be worthy of good, of reward and merit, because he's a rodef achar asrora. And the Gemara says in Erevin, a rodef achar asrora, hasrora barachas mimenu. So don't be depressed if you're not appointed as the leader, as you don't get the appointment, because you don't want to be described under the category of Rodef Acher HaSrora, because if so, the Srora will run away from you and you'll never achieve it. Lo b'mheira mitivin lo. Rav Acha midifti omar, what is the meaning of the statement here of Lo b'mheira mitivin lo? He accepts Rav Ashi's approach that if there's some sort of evil that comes upon him from Shamayim, it's not going to be easy to change that around. But it doesn't mean exactly Ein Metivin Lo B'Mehera, but L'Olam Ein Metivin Lo. It's even more dramatic in its repercussions, and the Gemara doesn't understand what this is all about. What is Rav Acha B'Difti saying? V'lohi, it's impossible to say that Ein Metivin Lo L'Olam. Rav Acha Midifti Milsa de Nafshi Hu Di Omar. He wasn't telling this to others that once the arrow starts moving, unfortunately, in the bottom, in the downward position, it will never be changed. But rather, he was talking about something that happened in his own life. The Gemara tells us at the beginning of Bava Basra that the Chachamim decided to appoint Rav Acha Midifti as their head, as the leader of the Jewish community, and at the end, instead, they appointed Marba Rav Ashi. And then Rav Acha made this statement that once Nidchas HaShah, since the appointment as the head was pushed off, it's never going to happen. And this was not something that's true for other people. He was just making a statement in terms of his own personal life. Tosis here, Dibra Maskel Yolam, raises the question that based on the Gemara Bava Basra of Achami Difti himself said, Kol Miriam Lo, Lo B'mheira, Mitivin Lo. Why did he himself say in this Gemara, Li Olam Ein Mitivin Lo? He himself is quoted as saying, Lo B'mheira Mitivin Lo. And Tosis answers that when Rav Acha Midifti was of the opinion that they would, in his early stage, that they would come back and ultimately appoint him as the head, he would be the Rosh Yeshiva, then he said, Lo b'mehera mativin lo. But at the end, when he saw that they would never actually appoint him as the Rosh Yeshiva, then he changed his nusach, and his tune was, Li olam ein mativin lo, again, only referring to himself. The Gemara now gets to the third din, Alokeach bayis b'eretz Yisrael Kosvin Olav Ono Afilu B'Shabbos, for the sake of clinching this sale of a land from a goy over to a Jew in the land of Israel, we could have the mechira, the shtar mechira, the bill of sale could be signed even on Shabbos. The Gemara asks, B'Shabbos Al Kedaitoch, it doesn't make any sense that we would allow violating one of the 39 malachas, namely Ksiva on Shabbos, to write this shtar for the sake of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. After all, Ksiva is a malacha of Skila. How could you allow that for the sake of the great mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? The Gemara answers, Ella Kedama Rava. This is Rava's interpretation back in Masechta Gittin. That's what Rashi points out over here. And Rava says there, again, in our Gemara, it's really in Shabbos and in Beitza, it's not in Gittin. Rava says that the case that we're talking about is Omer Lenochri Viosa, Achinami Omer Lenochri Viosa. V'afagav Damir Lenochri Shvus, Shvusi Mishum Yishved Solo Gozru, Lo Gozru Be Rabbonon. Now, Rava, in his original context, said the following, that for the purpose of what's called Asiyas Tzarchei Chola, we're talking about a person whose life is not endangered, he's a Chola Shein Bo Sakona. If the asiya that required that we're doing is a chil Shabbos asiya, then we can only be matir amir l'nochri for the sake of the chola. Here too, with regard to Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, the only possibility of permitting something which is prohibited on Shabbos is omer l'nochri, is amir liakum. And that's for the sake of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Amir liakum is an isur d'rabbanon. And for the purpose of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, the Rabbanan look the other way, and they apply the principle of Lo Gozru Bei Rabbanan. They limited their gzerah in such a way that would not apply for the sake of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And Rashi says that the Iser of Amir L'Nochri is derived from Yeshayahu HaNovi Mimotza Chafatzecha V'daber Dovar, that a Dibur L'Nochri, that he should do a Malach on behalf of a Jew, is Asur. The Smag has a suffix, whether it's Doraisa or Derabonon, because if it's based on Dibri Kabbalah, it might have a quasi-Doraisa status, and that's a long discussion. But in any event, the guy here is about to leave. He's checking out. If we don't catch him now, then he may not be willing later on to transfer ownership over this piece of property in Eretz Yisrael. And if we don't get the shtar signed immediately, the deal may be very well off. We're going to allow, the Chacham are going to allow, looking aside at the gzera of Amir Laka for the sake of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And the Dvar Avram, excuse me, the Magen Avram wants to add another dimension here to this discussion. The Iser in Dvarim Perek Zayin, which Amir Shem will read tomorrow, of Lo Sichanem, that means that we're not allowed to give Chaniya of Karkat Eretz Yisrael. So not only are we violating this Iser of Amir Lakum in order to fulfill, in a positive sense, the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, to guarantee that the Jew will be able to settle in that parcel of land, but also to avoid a lav of Lo Sichanem, that too is a very powerful factor here to lift the Iser Drabanan of Amir Lakum. Now, what other mitzvos would override the Iser of Amir L'Nakum? For example, would the mitzvah of Milah, which is a great mitzvah, allow us to be Matir Amir L'Nakum for the sake of the Milah? And even though the Iser of Amir L'Nakum is only the Rabbanan, the mitzvah of Milah is Da'oraisa, nevertheless, the Gemara establishes in Erevin that we would only be able to be matir if it's a shvus to shvus. But if it's one single shvus, namely Amir L'Akum, we would not be matir l'tzorech mitzvah. And you'll see this here in Tosa on the bottom of that page, Dima Maskel Omer. However, Tosa quotes a Bahag that even in Isa Doraisa is mutal lomel l'nochri l'asoso l'tzorech mitzvah. And it sounds like, according to the Bahag, you would be allowed to violate the Iser of Amir L'Akum for the sake of any mitzvah. That's the impression you get from Tosus. And the bulk of this Tosus and the discussion about the Bahag, which carries on to Pei Aleph Omid Aleph, addresses the issue of Kvura, the mitzvah of Kvura Sames, telling a guy to violate Yontif for the sake of Kvura Sames. And in such a case, the Bahag seems to be lenient even for a mitzvah other than Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, with all due respect to the unique nature of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael as both an essay and the avoidance of a loss of Lo Tichanim. Nevertheless, there was no heter, excuse me, the heter of Amir L'Nochri to trump Amir L'Nochri would be extended even to other mitzvahs, like, for example, the mitzvah of Kvura. Omar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Omar Rabbi Yonason Alokeach Ir BeEretz Yisrael Kofenoso Likach Lo Derech Mi Arba Ruchosa Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Shmuel says that a person purchases a large tract of land in Eretz Yisrael, big enough for a city, and he wants to guarantee that others will be able to settle there. I don't know if he's selling it by dividing up into small parcels, but in any event, he should guarantee that there should be access from all four sides, setting up a derech and the roads and so forth that will lead to this area so that people can settle there. And now the Gemara is going to quote a braisa, which has to do with our discussion earlier about Ya'aros, about the forests in Eretz Yisrael, and Amir Tzashem, we'll pick that up tomorrow.